Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., and I am here in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And we are back for part two of my discussion with Mike Pinaki, the owner of Network Protocol Specialist. The last show, if you watched or listened to it out of order, shame on you. But our last show, we basically started talking about some of the handwork networking diagnostic tools that we have, the Link Sprinter, the Link Runner, the One Touch, and we kind of focused on a lot of the features and talked about some introductory stuff. Well, we're back today, and we're going to get into more specifically some tips and stories on how we use these tools and hope that they will help you guys, if you haven't pulled the trigger on them yet, that these things that we talk about today will help you pull the trigger. So let me first get back to Mike. Mike, how are you?
I am doing great, Marvin.
All right. Glad to have you back. And just so that people know, we did not record two episodes in one day. This is actually a separate day. So
I needed a day to recover from all the fun that we had yesterday.
All right. So I don't know. How do you want to get started? I know that we can kind of, you know, we don't really need to recap everything that we went over, but we just talked about the features and stuff. I know that I had asked you yesterday about what got you on the path of using these tools. And I can tell you, I should probably tell you how I got started, not with just, you know, the cable testing, because when I had that happen, I didn't actually buy one of the devices from at the time would have been Fluke. But I was doing a demo of one of the tools. I had actually called in, and they had given, I can't remember if it was 14 days or 30 days. And at the time, I had already had stuff like, you know, the cable IQ, and I had the micro scanner, and I had some of that. But I was demoing the One Touch, and a customer had called that was having an issue where their office, they were having many, many troubles connecting to servers, printers, network devices, and it would be intermittent. They couldn't really tell you from one day to the next why this had happened. And it had been happening for a couple of months. And the funny thing was, they had an IT guy, and he couldn't figure it out. So I got referred to them, and I said, I'm going to take, at the time, my Fluke.
Okay.
Walked in, listened to the story. They told me everything. We kind of walked around, looked at the closet. And I said, well, let me plug this in, and this will give me an overview of the network, and we'll just start with that. And within, I don't know, a minute of plugging it in, it told me that there were two DHCP servers on the network. And that's what sold me for life.
Well, you know, and it's funny, Marvin, in situations like that, I think that one of the things that people don't always realize is the impact that these ongoing problems have on their credibility. That, you know, after a while, the people that they're supporting start losing confidence in their ability to go in and solve the problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about in the last podcast why it's important to have professional grade tools. And I think about, I was just doing some work on my auto mechanics network. Yeah, you know, we've got a good relationship there. I fix his network. He fixes my car. And he, you know, you walk around their shop and you don't see them using, you know, low-end tools. And in many cases, these mechanics are making the investment in the tools themselves. But they know that when it comes to, you know, making sure that they torque something to the right torque specification, that it's going to hold up with everyday use, they're spending the money on those professional grade tools.
Yeah.
And like you saw with being able to identify that DHCP problem so quickly, having the right tool that gives you the right visibility into what's going on significantly reduces the time it takes to get to the root of those types of problems.
Yeah. So I use that as a story of telling everybody that, you know, I talk to about these tools. Most of the time, technicians will have a rate that they charge that is a minimum rate, 1 hour.
Right.
Usually is, you know, regardless if I solve the problem in 10 minutes or an hour, I'm charging you an hour. And to think that if you can get in and out of jobs in 10 minutes, but still charge the hour,
yep.
How great is that?
Well, and for the company, and this is it, that cutting down the amount of time that they're having issues is important. And, you know, in some cases, I've talked to various consultants about the idea of value-based billing. And that is, you know, that value of what that service is. And sometimes the less time it takes, the greater the value it is to the person having the problem. I know that if I'm bleeding, that I put a great value on, you know, how fast they can resolve that problem versus feeling like, you know, they solved it quickly and I shouldn't have to pay as much.
Right. All right. So, Michael, let's start with you telling us, I mean, do you have any great, crazy stories or tips that you'd like to get started with? Like, what's the one thing that stands out?
You know, so here's one that stands out, and it's one that I have run into my entire career. In fact, I've joked that if we could eliminate this problem, that I could just retire. And that is duplex mismatch.
Mm.
And you would think that a problem that started back in the late 90s, and just to give a tiny bit of history about the whole duplex mismatch thing, prior to 1998, there were some ambiguities in the IEEE 802.3 specification as to how auto negotiation should take place. So there were some groups, like some very large TAC groups, that were recommending to people that they force feed and duplex, that things will work right. Now, after 1998, I mean, we're talking about, what, 20 years ago, those ambiguities were taken out of the specification. And we see that we just didn't run into the same problem. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, auto negotiation works. I still, to this day, run into locations where somebody has forced the speed and duplex to 100 full. And what we run into is that once we force the speed and duplex to 100 full on a switch, it stops sending the fast link pulse. And that fast link pulse is how the link partner at the other end can determine what the capabilities of that switch are. So if I'm sending out that fast link pulse, I'll tell you, Marvin, I'm capable of 10 100 gig. I can do half or full duplex.
Right.
And then what you do is you send a message back to me and you tell me what you're capable of. We both acknowledge each other and we choose that speed and duplex. It's the highest speed and duplex we both support. Now, when you force the speed and duplex on a switch, a router, or most other devices, what will happen is it will stop sending that fast link pulse. When it does that, the link partner listens for what encoding you're using. And it says, okay, you're sending the packets on 100 meg. I can tell that. But I can't tell what duplex you're using because you're not telling me anymore. So that link partner has to go back to the IEEE specifications. It digs through. It finds the paragraph and clause that says, if I can't tell the speed and duplex you're doing, I have to go to half duplex. So now we have one end at half duplex, and we have the other end at full duplex. And the full duplex end talks whenever it wants to talk, and the half duplex end only talks when the full duplex end isn't. Now, there's a key thing that we can look for when we see this problem, and that is FCS errors on the port that's having this problem. Because that half duplex end, what it'll do is it'll start talking. And it's like, you know, you and I are doing this podcast. I start talking and you're full duplex. You talk right over the top of me. And I get offended. I abort transmission of my packet. And then I send out a jam signal. I go, ah! and what that shows up as on the switch is a FCS error. Now, to be clear, we never, ever, 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 ever want to see FCS errors on our switch ports.
Right.
Those are a clear indication of cable problems, interface problems, or duplex mismatch. So there's a couple things with the NetScout tools that I like that help me find those. And one of them is with a tool like the OneTouch. That OneTouch ATG2 and 10G are going to go out and do a discovery of the network. And they're going to, if we put in the correct SNMP community string, they're going to go out and query all of those switch ports, and they're going to look for those errors on those ports. So one of the very first things I do whenever I go in and do troubleshooting is I will go in and look for those switches that have FCS errors. To me, those are like having a cracked foundation on your house. You can spackle that drywall all you want, and it will continue to crack. You will continue to have problems until you fix those physical layer problems. The other thing that we find, whether we're using the Link Sprinter, the Link Runner, the One Touch, every one of those is going to show us that we are only connected at 100 meg, and we're connected at half duplex. And so if we go in and validate those connections prior to plugging a device in, and we know that we are supposed to get gig, and I plug in and I don't, that is a hard stop right there. Stop. Do not move forward. Find out what the problem is there. So just like you're going through and using your Link Runner to check each port on one of those switches, if you plug that in and you know that that's a gig switch, you get 100 meg on any one of those ports, now it's time to stop, go back and take a look at what's happening with that port. Has someone changed the configuration of it?
So there is a very good argument for a discussion that I've had a couple of times with other techs. The question often comes up, why do I force all of my customers to have managed switches? And that is a very good reason right there, because on, you know, dumb switches, unmanaged, you're not going to see those errors.
Yep. Well, and, you know, along that lines, a friend of mine at a pretty large company, their building management system was all cobbled together with unmanaged switches. And so this is a system that controlled their HVAC, controlled their access, things like that. And they had daisy chained all of these little switches together. Now, over the years, I've dispelled myths like how many switches can we daisy chain together? Well, setting up for Interop one year, we had a chance to daisy chain about 30 switches together, because each switch is a storm forward switch. We can daisy chain switches together forever, and it's not going to cause a problem. However, what happened with them is one of those switches went down, and because it was unmanaged, it was virtually impossible to tell where that switch was. Mm. Now, in this case, it was in a cabinet where people would store their bicycles when they rode them to work, and someone hit that wall wart power supply with their bike and knocked it out of the wall. Now, if they had managed switches, we could use something like the One Touch and its path analysis capabilities. And this is one that I really like. In fact, one thing with that we see with the One Touch is it will go out and pull those bridge forwarding tables off of all the switches and figure out what MAC is associated with what with each port. So then if I do a path analysis through my network, not only do I get my layer 3 path analysis like I would do in a trace route in Windows, but I get that layer 2 path analysis too. I can tell what switches I go through. And this is something that, you know, you've been out there, you know how many hours it could take to figure out how these switches are connected together, what path I take. And to add one more on top of that, I can even specify what TCP port number I want to use for that path analysis. So if I have a firewall or something along the way blocking that traffic, I can go in and use that as a way to either validate that the firewall is doing its job or determine whether that firewall is inadvertent. Somebody put a rule in there that's now blocking my traffic. But I am there with you. The managed switches, I can buy a nice little Netgear GS108T 8 port, you know, gig switch for under $100. And now I can see who's on each port.
Right.
I can look for my errors. All of those things. So yeah, there's really, I don't see any reason to go out and buy anything other than a managed switch in an environment.
Right. Well, that's exactly what we do. So you had mentioned a couple of things that caught my eye, or my ear, since this is an audio podcast, trace routing. So one of the things that I do with my One Touch is if we're doing a cutover with an internet service provider.
Okay.
And especially if the customer is going from one provider to another or one type of service to another, they're upgrading from, you know, DSL to cable or cable to Ethernet, and they're getting different IPs and things like that, I will actually configure my OneTouch as if it's the firewall. So it will get the static, you know, gateway, LAN, subnet, and it'll get the provider's DNS information.
Yep.
So before I, you know, ever think about switching over a firewall router, I will put in my OneTouch and verify through their services that the settings they gave me work and the system works. I get out to internet. And I know that when I've had these issues with an internet service provider, so of course the first thing they want to yell at you about is, well, it must be your equipment.
Right. Yep.
And I have to sit there and say, nope, can't be my equipment. And it's great when there's a field tech from their company on site, because they're right there with me looking at the OneTouch, and I'm showing them, I have the information, here's the stuff. And it's so easy that I can actually do the trace route out to their DNS from the OneTouch.
Yep.
And show them where we're losing information. So that has saved me minutes, hours of arguing with the internet service provider.
Well, and again, you're taking a very professional approach at how you're going in and doing these cutovers. And one of the things that where I've gone in and helped customers, you know, get their networks working to, you know, as to the best possible, you know, level that we can. One thing that I've really tried to steer people away from is statically assigning IP addresses to anything. Mm-hmm. Because these are things that just come back and bite us. And if there's a device that they want to make sure it always gets the same address, I'm a big fan of creating a DHCP reservation. So going into my DHCP server, putting a reservation in for that MAC address. So that way, if I need to change my subnet mask, my DNS servers, any of those things, I change it in DHCP and it gets pushed out to those devices.
Right.
Now, one of the things that's nice, whether I'm using my Link Runner AT2000 or my OneTouch, is the ability to change the MAC address of that device. So kind of to follow on with that S word, you know, should, from our last podcast, I could put that DHCP reservation in. But if I want to make sure everything's going to work properly, one of the things I can do is I can change the MAC address of my test equipment to the same MAC address of the piece of equipment I'm going to deploy, run the test, make sure it gets the proper IP address. So now I can say that I've set it up. I know I have a good connection. I've gotten the address that I expect with all the information that I expect. So when somebody comes back, and boy, people love to point fingers at the network. Yeah, it's the network, which I love. It keeps me in business, and yeah, we keep getting to buy these cool tools. But it's one of those things where if we can say we did all these things the way that we were supposed to, and when we ran the test, it worked or didn't work, you know, it gives us a good idea of what's going on.
So that reminds me of another story with, I sometimes have a co-host on with me, and a gentleman who we always have this love-hate discussion about copier vendors.
Okay.
That, you know, will just show up and do whatever they think that, you know, is best for the network when it's not their network. And one of the things that he talked about the last time was somebody wanted to have an IP address before they showed up with the equipment.
Okay.
And he's like, well, I can assign the IP address. Just give me the MAC address.
Right.
And they're like, well, we need an IP address. He's like, no, I need the MAC address. I'll give you the IP once I set it up, because he does exactly what we discussed, DHCP reservations, not just letting them come in and statically assign it. So how great would it be as a pretest to get the MAC address from the vendor, you set it up on the OneTouch, go in, yep, do your reservation, you can prove that it works before they even show up, send yep them the sheet. You know?
Exactly.
And you're good to go.
And if you have a copier that's going to send out, you know, that we could scan to email or something mm-hmm. like that.
Oh, yes.
So we could say, hey, look, we're going to put a test in the OneTouch to make sure that we have connectivity using port 25 out to the email server. So now we know that we can get out to the internet. We know that that device is going to be able to connect out there. And that validation that things are, we know that things are going to work out.
That's another, you know, I'm sorry, I just got to write this note down. So I have done the mail test from customers that they'll have a mail server on site. And as part of my test, I'll just put it in the profile. But I had not thought about doing a verification of a copier that will do a scan to email. So that is something to add to my profile.
Now, one of the things that it'd be nice to have a tool that did this, and I just haven't had the time to do the coding to come up with something like this. But one of the things I'll do is with the OneTouch AT G2, we have the ability to put it in line.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it'll pass PoE. And some of the fun things that when we put that in line, we do an inline capture, down at the bottom of the screen, not only can we see how many packets we've captured, it'll show us how much PoE current the device is drawing. So now, if I bring in a phone, an access point, and I need to know, you know, roughly how much power is this going to draw, I could go in and I could put that in line and do that capture. So I was working with one group that had a radio, that the radio and the control unit for the radio were separated by an Ethernet connection. So this way you could put all your radio, RF radio equipment in a closet, but actually have the microphone, the headset, the control panel located elsewhere in the building. And they're having a hard time getting it to work through the firewall. So what we did was we put the OneTouch in line and did a packet capture where that radio control head and the radio were both on the same switch. Then what we did was we took that trace file and brought it into Wireshark, and we went into statistics and we took a look at conversations. And by looking at those conversations, we could now see every TCP port that was used to communicate with those. And you know, you talk about stories kind of along that lines. I was doing a class in the Midwest. At the end of the class, the salesperson said, hey, can I give you a ride back to the office or to the airport? I said, sure. So on our way back to the airport, he said, do you mind if we stop by a customer? Well, we're out in the middle of a cornfield somewhere. It's not like I could say no. And so we stopped by this customer, and it was a manufacturing plant that ran three shifts a day. And what was happening was every time they logged out of the PCs between shifts and they went to log back in again, it took 10 minutes. So it was eating up 30 minutes of production time each day. So they had promised that they would buy a piece of test equipment from them if they could figure out what the problem was. So there was no pressure on me at all, right? And so, you know, here's a very expensive piece of equipment on the line. So what we did was we put in this case, it was a OneTouch, we put it in line with that PC, did the packet capture. Then we went back and took a look at the packet capture. We could see that that device was trying to go out to the internet. And I asked the network administrator, I said, have you blocked all traffic to the internet? They said, yes, but they said the vendor assured them that this application did not need internet access. So we went in and I took a look and we could see that it was going out to VeriSign to try and get a certificate.
Mm.
I said, could you do me a favor? Could you poke a little hole in the firewall for me just for VeriSign? As soon as they did, that PC logged on immediately. Balloons fell down from the ceiling. A marching band came through. Everyone was happy. You know, there was a big celebration. These PCs could log on instantly. So one of the things that we find is by being able to get in line and do that capture and then look at those conversations, I now know the dependencies to that device. Once I know those dependencies, I can go in and build a profile in that OneTouch AT that allows me to test each one of those dependencies.
Hmm.
And then I can run a report that gives me that green bar. That green bar up at the top is what we love to see, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Because when we get that green bar, it tells us every one of our tests work. So we can tell that we could ping the devices we need to ping. We could get to the TCP ports we need to get to. And if we have a device like a Linkrunner AT2000 at the other end, we can get the throughput that we need.
Yep. And the best thing about that green bar, it's something that a customer can understand.
Exactly.
If they see green, oh, must be good. If they see red, then we know something's got to still be fixed.
And we know what we need to fix.
Yep.
Because it gives us that red X on the tests that fail. And so we can get right in there and see that this is, we're not guessing, we're not throwing darts at a dartboard. We know exactly what it is that's at, right. where we have those problems.
So you mentioned the PoE in the phones. So I did a job, I guess it's going on 3 weeks now.
Okay.
And I mentioned a little bit yesterday, or last show, depending on when this gets posted, that a local tech of mine, who I think I called him Adam.
Okay, yeah.
And so where he actually, you know, calls me when he wants to use my tools. And one of the jobs that we did was a cable / PoE verification. He had a customer that had existing cabling that they wanted to put in a voice over IP phone system. And he wanted to verify that all of their cables were not only just good cables, but that they would actually run PoE phones.
Okay.
And he knew that when I had got the Linkrunner AT and the OneTouch, one of the things that I had told him is I can verify not just that you have PoE, but with the True Power feature, that we can actually put a load on the cable and show that, yes, this cable will handle PoE with this voltage and all of that. So he actually had me put together a proposal for that company, where they paid me literally just to come out, and I actually had to bring a PoE switch because they didn't even have one. They were waiting to verify that the cabling was good before we did that. And so I used a combination. I used both the Linkrunner and the OneTouch to do my testing. And it was great because I could do basic cable testing. And one of the things we found was just by doing these tests, and the test took less than 2 minutes per cable, was that on a few of the cables, they had reversed polarity on their cables. And so I could identify to him, you have, and I think we only identified 5 cables that needed some sort of fix. They were either, you know, reverse polarity or, you know, something along those lines. But I basically got a job out of the fact that I could do the True Power PoE test.
Well, you know, that brings up a good point in that if we have a cable plant installed, whether it's copper or fiber, most clients wouldn't accept that cable plant without having a certification test run on that. You know, and yesterday, or the last podcast, we mentioned the, you know, like
whenever
the
it posts.
DSX 5000, 8000,
right.
The CertiFiber Pro for going in and testing those. And that's something that we do training on. Well, it's funny how once we put the active equipment in, we don't do that same sort of testing. That we don't go back and validate those. And you could say, well, you know, 99% of the time it works. But oftentimes it's that 1% that's going to cause us the most grief.
Right.
And then when we add in, just like we talked about yesterday, Linkware and our Link Live.
Yeah.
And we go in there and we can upload those test results to Link Live, then that even takes us one step further. And it's funny, you talk about the PoE. When I was doing one of the interops in New York at the Javits Center, they had gotten the network all built out and they were starting to deploy PCs and voice over IP phones, and the phones weren't working. So I got there, I'd taken a red eye. So I got there at like 9 o'clock in the morning, I come rolling in, and they said, okay, smart guy, you're the one that's supposed to know about all this testing. Why aren't our phones working? So we went in and we hooked up one of the Linkrunner AT2000s. And I think it's important to note, you know, at the last podcast you brought up, there's a couple different versions of that Linkrunner AT2000 or AT. the 1000 and the 2000.
Right.
And the 2000 is the one that does true power. And so with that true power, we're not only just measuring that voltage, we're drawing the current on there at the same time. And if we go back in and take a look at Ohm's law, and this is, I started out in electrical engineering, and so there's a lot of this stuff that, yeah, after playing with electronics for so much of my life, it's fun to see these things apply. And Ohm's law says that as our current goes up, if we have resistance, our voltage is going to go down. And so in this case, as soon as we applied that current, our voltage dropped below the 37 volt minimum. And when we started taking a look at the cable, we found out it was copper cladded aluminum wire. And so this is some wire that we see out there every once in a while that is not true. You know, it's not Ethernet cable we'd ever want to have in our network because it's aluminum with a thin layer of copper on it.
But and now yeah, is that a situation where somebody was cheap and yes. maybe said, "Hey, yeah, I'll do your network for you. I'll run your cable and I can do it at half the price because they're using."
And we joked that, you know, the cable said Cat 5e and the E was backwards, right? Yeah, it was obviously not a certified cable we'd use. And what's funny is I was in Singapore doing some training, and one of the guys that was doing a cabling class down there said, "Okay, if you're so smart, what's wrong with this cable?" And he just hands me a roll of cable. And it felt like more like a roll of tubing than it did cable. I said, "Well, that's copper cladded aluminum." He said, "Oh, hey, that's pretty good." What we find is that some of these cable manufacturers will actually put scrap metal or concrete in the bottom of the box to add that weight back in that's missing between the copper and the aluminum. So it really is, in many cases, a deceptive practice of this copper cladded aluminum wire. But anytime we have resistance in our connections, we have resistance in our wire, that resistance is going to start affecting our voltage once we draw power. So having technologies like True Power, where we actually apply that that current draw. And I'll tell you, Cisco Live, year before last, one of the real eye-opening experiences for me was this whole digital ceiling. And what we're seeing is a big push to move away from running lighting in a building off of 277 volts or 240 or 120, but they're moving to running that lighting off of PoE.
Really?
And yes, it's kind of neat. You start going out and looking at what companies like Cree are doing with lighting, and what they're doing is they're LED lights. Each light has an IP address. And so they're putting these high power PoE switches up in the ceiling, and we're seeing that they're getting into wattages of 60 watts, 90 watts that they're running out to these lighting systems. And each light has an IP, and the switch is PoE powered and has an IP. So you actually go in and configure that light switch to turn off and on those lights. But the lights have things like motion detectors built into them, light sensors. So they can be integrated into alarm systems. They can change the color of the light. So if it's in the morning, you can add more blue to wake people up. If a conference room's busy, you can change the color of the light outside the conference room because it detects motion in the conference room. And so it's an interesting approach. Computers, TVs, we're seeing a lot more push to run devices that are network connected strictly off of PoE instead of running them off of higher voltages. But this puts a lot more demands on our ability to make sure PoE is working properly.
So this is a lot more than IoT that people have been, you know, fretting about in this, you know, this Internet of Things that, you know, everything's going to connect to the Internet. This is now everything is going to be on a network, let alone our network, if we're the IT person for a business and they decide, you know, they want to put their lights, they want to, you know, it's one thing to put your cameras and your phones on the network, but now we're talking lights.
Yep. Well, and this is where being able to do that path analysis to make sure ports are blocked because, you know, we've seen these websites pop up where people have allowed, you know, holes through their firewall where people have been able to get into cameras in their homes unknowns to them. And so, you know, the same thing holds true with as we're deploying these building management systems. We need to make sure that we understand, you know, what traffic is passing through. You know, I've become a big fan of, you know, these internet connected power strips. I just bought some for my video studio, where it is a power strip for under $30. It has four outlets that can be individually controlled, plus the USB ports can be turned off and on.
Right.
Which is great, because now I walk out into my video studio and I say, Alexa, turn on the studio lights. And all my lighting comes on. But I also make sure that that is connected to a wireless network that is outside my office network that can't get access inside. Because, you know, those systems offer a greater ability, I think, for problems, especially as I've captured and found out that much of that traffic is unencrypted.
Right. So that brings me to, I was going to bring this up in another way, but having all of these types of device groups on your network, everybody's familiar with VLANs.
Yep.
And one of the things that I have loved in the last, I don't know, I guess it's year or so that I've been working with the OneTouch, the latest firmwares are now VLAN aware.
Yep.
So that on the OneTouch now, when I plug it into a switch and I can connect to even a firewall, if the VLANs are configured on the firewall, you actually will see the IP addresses for each VLAN in that device.
Yes.
I mean, that is awesome, as far as
yes,
I'm concerned.
It is.
Now, if it would just tell me, here are all the VLAN, which I think, well, I'm not going to say it. You're smiling there.
You bet. That's, you know, we're going to see that is a feature.
Okay.
That being able to see what VLANs are out there.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, it's not fully released yet, right?
Yeah, we're going to be covering it in the class in a couple of weeks.
Okay, there we go. All right. Yeah, you know, I wanted to make sure I wasn't scooping anything
right
here.
No, it's but, you know, that is, whenever I go in and configure those, I mean, that's something that I want to make sure that that I can see, right?
Yep.
That I can see what's out there, and I can see, did I properly configure this?
So a thing that I've done, so not just seeing them all on the OneTouch. One of the things I did at the ISP cutover that I do, this is the last one that I've done where I'm actually doing, we're just finishing up an SD-WAN installation for this customer at multiple locations. And so along with setting up a profile for the firewall verification, I also set up a profile for the local network.
Okay.
That I can, you know, just test once the firewall is in. I can test the local network. Does it see everything it's supposed to see on that network? Does it see across the VPN back to the main office? So I've got those tests set up in there. And then I also set up a VLAN for their phone system, which is on a separate MPLS.
Yep.
And the field tech was asking me, why are we doing that? And I just let them know that, you know, there have been times where a port has been misconfigured on the vendor end that I don't have any, you know, permission to go in and play with, or, you know, for whatever reason, all of a sudden we have a phone that's misconfigured and cannot register after we do the upgrade, or a PC shows up where it all of a sudden can't connect to the local network, but it can connect to the internet. So for that one customer, they're remote, so all they have to do is get to their terminal server and they work. But when they go to print, they can't find printers. So that's actually one of the tests that I do, where I actually plug in to the phone system with that VLAN information to make sure that nothing has bled over in the configuration. So that was a thing that I wanted to say about the VLANs, but now being able to see, you know, if you are using one single physical network with VLANs configured, you can see all that information in the OneTouch.
Yes, you can.
Nice.
Yep. I mean, there are so many handy little features in there. I think about one of my sons is going to school up at the University of Washington here and lives in a fraternity. He called me up and he said, I've got an internet question. I said, what's that? And he says, well, it's not working. Okay, well, you know, this is one where we could spend hours on the phone. Or I said, why don't we just come up and we'll fix your internet and take you to dinner. Okay, so we went up there and nothing's managed. It's all off the shelf, mm-hmm. access points. One of the little features on the Link Runner that worked out really well for us is the flash port.
Yes.
And, you know, there's that feature where we can go in and we can turn the link off and on, and it will do it at a slow enough rate that you can look at a switch and you may see all the ports flashing quickly because of traffic, but you'll see this one port going off and on and off and on. And we just started looking for that port, and we found out that somebody had plugged their Comcast modem into one of the inside ports on their wireless router.
Oh.
And so they were having two DHCP servers, right? They were getting, sometimes the Netgear would give them an IP address, sometimes the Comcast modem would give them an IP address. If that Comcast modem gave them an IP, they could get to the internet. So it caused some, you know, sometimes the internet works, sometimes it doesn't. So we were able to work that out, and I made sure to bring my Brady labeler with me, because that's the other piece, is I found out that once I figure out where something goes, I'm very quick to pull out that Brady cable labeler and print out a label, stick that label on there. You know, this is where that goes. And right. That's that dirty word of documentation.
Yes.
We were talking about last time.
Yep. That is such a huge thing is to, yes, you can go out and fix something, but label it, document it, so that if you're called again, you don't have to go out and rediscover the problem.
Exactly.
All you have to do is, you know, what's funny is I haven't done it in a while. I used to actually take pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, and, I'm sorry. I just got giddy because the Link Runner G2, I heard, allows for all of that sort of things with picture taking.
Oh. When you're ready to talk about that one, we can. Yeah, one of the things I found, I've collected a variety of devices because to connect to that, because with that, it's an Android-based operating system. And I've got I think it might be TP-Link, but I've got the Wi-Fi Bluetooth USB adapter plugged into mine.
Okay.
So if it's Bluetooth, I can connect it to it. So I've got a little Microsoft Wedge keyboard that I connect to my Link Runner G2. So now I've got a keyboard that I can use.
Oh.
I've got a barcode scanner. So if I plug in an access point and I want to scan in the MAC address and the serial number or something like that, I can scan. I've got a Bluetooth barcode scanner. I've got a Bluetooth printer that we can attach to that, so I can print my labels right from the Epson software on there. So when you're ready to go through that one,
yeah, you need to stop teasing is what you need to stop.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! All right, well we've spent a good amount of time here. We've got a few minutes. Is there anything else in terms of tips and tricks that you may have written down that you want to make sure we get to?
You know, I had written down some things on that OneTouch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of things, the VoIP analysis. We've been talking about VoIP and so on.
Yep.
There is, you know, a tool built into that where I can put it in line with the voice over IP phone, and it will show my log, especially if I'm using a protocol like SIP. If the phone's using a proprietary protocol, we could go out and see it got an IP address. We can see how much power it's drawing. We can do a packet capture. But if we're using, you know, the SIP protocol for our VoIP, now that OneTouch is going to decode all those SIP messages for us. And it's going to show that the phone registered, it put in for notifications, we can make a phone call, it's going to give us our mean opinion score, It's going to tell us how many frames we lost. It's going to tell us what our jitter was. So this is where, if I have someone reporting voice over IP problems, being able to take that out, put that in line with their phone, and get that view of what's happening on the wire. And I'll have to dig them back out again. I once wrote down, you know, my 10 truths of networking, and one of them was the wire doesn't lie.
Right.
And we can see what's happening there. Another one, iPerf, with the latest version of the OneTouch that came out in January, it supports an iPerf client. So I can go out, and again, whether that iPerf server is running on one of my NetScout test instruments, or it's running on my Mac or on a Linux box or on a Windows box, I can initiate an iPerf test from my OneTouch AT. So being able to do that iPerf is a real nice way to go in and do testing using TCP. In fact, one last thing I'd like to throw in, because this came up recently, is when we're doing the performance test, someone asked, why do we use UDP instead of TCP? And the big reason that UDP is used for those tests is because protocols like TCP depend on window size and application block size. And these are great for being able to put large blocks of data out on the wire, but they're also impacted by the round-trip latency. And if our application block size isn't big enough, we will see that that latency can cause us to not be able to fill up the wire, where UDP doesn't. So if I send out a stream of UDP packets, this is a more accurate representation of my packet loss and of my true throughput of that link. And this is where, you know, if I really want to fill a link up, especially over a WAN link, using UDP is the best way to do that. So when we do the performance tests on tools like the OneTouch, we're using UDP to measure that performance. When we use iPerf, we can choose to use TCP, so then we can start finding out what impact are things like round-trip latency have. So that's a big differentiator between those two particular tests.
Okay. All right. You know, we didn't talk about the performance test, but I use that a lot.
Yep.
And I actually use it probably more for Wi-Fi testing, because with the OneTouch, you can not only, you know, plug in a wire and do a performance test, you can actually do a performance test with the Wi-Fi.
Yes, you can. And you can make yourself the endpoint.
Yes.
Right? And that's kind of a nice one, is I can plug the wired port into the wired network, connect the wireless port to the wireless network, and the OneTouch will do a test right back to itself through those two ports.
So I use that a lot. So if you are listening out there and you want to, now there's a couple of things. One, they've got the Wi-Fi validation that's built into the OneTouch. So you can actually do that validation. Is it connected to the access point? Is it, you know, and you've got a log of the handshake, but you can also do the performance test, and you can do it, you know, to itself. If you have a Link Runner AT2000, it will be a reflector as well. So you can actually, and again, the reason I do that is if I've got a wireless access on one point of the building, but they need to connect to something on the other side, you know, back to a server or something, I can leave the Link Runner back in the server closet and do the Wi-Fi test on the other. I mean, not that it really makes that much of a difference, but to a customer, that's how they can visualize, I'm over here where your wireless access point is. My reflector is over in the server room, so I'm checking the connection, you know, from the Wi-Fi to the server and all of that. And, you know, having those two devices do that performance test, you know, has been something that has really, I don't want to say it saved my bacon, but, I mean, customers love it.
Well, you know, I think, Marvin, one of the big things out of these tools is this idea that we can set thresholds, and then we can get a green check mark or a red X. And once, you know, whether it's VoIP, if my VoIP provider can tell me the acceptable level of jitter, packet loss, and latency,
right?
Now I can go in and do a test, and I can say, did it match that? And One of the issues that we run into, if I just use iPerf on my PC, is it gives me a number. Is that number acceptable? And so I've really found that by being able to go and set thresholds, set parameters, then have it give us a red light or a green light, it allows us as the designers of the network to set those thresholds and then send somebody else. You can send one of your techs out and have them run the test. And then they can tell you, oh, it was green, everything met threshold, or it was red and this is what didn't. Nothing is more useless than someone saying the network is down.
Right.
Really? Where do we go from there?
Right. And, you know, another beauty that you just mentioned, being able to set these tests up, these profiles, hand them to a technician, send them out. It's not like they have to, you know, reinvent the wheel. All they've got to do, turn it on, plug it in, select the proper profile, hit test.
Yep.
A great way to standardize all of your testing, that you're running the same test on the same device from every single point on the network.
Exactly.
And there's no room for human error, you know, to creep in. It's just, like you said, green or red. That's all there is.
And as far as I'm concerned, you know, if every time a new device is brought into the network, my preference would be put that something like that OneTouch AT in line, do a packet capture, go in, figure out what its dependencies are. Who is it talking to? Is it going to an outside DHCP or DNS server? Is it talking to a development database instead of the production database? Get that figured out, document that, create a test for it. So that way, when that device goes down someday, you can walk out, run the test, and say, is it that connection I'm providing you, is it providing the connectivity that's necessary for that device to work properly? And if it is, then we move toward the device. If it's not, then we move toward the network.
Beautiful. All right. Well, Mike, I want to say thank you. This has been a fantastic two-day podcast. And I have to say, like I told you when I first spoke to you, that it has just been an honor just to talk to you, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you are the expert. And going back to, do I even want to say the year? 1997, when I got started and was looking at these testers out in the field. And, you know, you have been, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you can find him on the YouTube with all of his videos there. And we mentioned that if you want to get training, especially the DSX cable certification, you know, that is being done through the Fluke side. And for these handheld testers that we talked about, the Link Sprinter, Link Runner, OneTouch, enterprise.netscout.com, go there, find the training, find the videos, and find out when these upcoming boot camps are that Mike is doing. And you'll get all the great information we just got and so, so much more. I mean, the OneTouch is a 4-hour boot camp, and you don't get through everything, do you?
No. Nope. It's a phenomenal piece of equipment. And we talked before we did the webcast, you know, this podcast, we talked about just how, you know, it's something that we carry out with us. Mm-hmm. And it, because we need to get answers as quickly as possible. And, you know, when people are paying us to be out somewhere to fix a problem.
Yes.
And being able to get those answers, and the number of times that I hear that shouldn't be on that network, that shouldn't be set up that way. Number of times I've found a bad subnet mask.
Mm.
And I don't mean to pick on people that set up printers, but so often, you know, you talk about copy machines. Somebody will put a 255.255.255.0 mask, a 24-bit mask on there, not knowing, not caring what mask is on that subnet.
Right.
And you'll end up with that problem where some people can see it, some people can't see it. And being able to identify issues like that very quickly is such a handy thing.
It is. All right. So, Mike, again, thank you. And for everyone out there, again, Mike Panacki with Network Protocol Specialist, the expert of the handheld networking diagnostic tools. And I'm telling you, Mike, when I get my Link Runner, I'm going to need a few days to play with it.
Okay.
But I'm going to call you right away.
All right. Well, I'll send you some links to the YouTube videos I've done on it.
All right.
That'll get you up to speed quickly. But yes, we could probably do another couple sessions just on that.
Just on that. Okay. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for once again downloading and listening to PodNuts Pro. And we are going to close off this episode that I had with Mike Panacki, owner of Network Protocol Specialist. And you'll be hearing from him again when I get my next unit in hand. Please be sure to go to the show note at podnuts.com, podnuts with a Z. I am going to put together, this is probably going to be our biggest show note to date. I'm going to put all the links in to the tools we talked about. I'm going to put in links to some of the other websites, the Love My Tool website, Mike's website, the training gear. There's going to be a lot of information. So anything you need to know about the NetScout tools, soon to be Stone Caliber, whatever brand they are, you will find that in the show note. So enjoy, have a good night, and until next time, holla.